This is Fresh Air. Communism came to a peaceful end in Czechoslovakia during that country's Velvet Revolution. One of the country's leading dissidents and intellectuals, Václav Havel, became the president. But the Havel era seems to be ending, and Czechoslovakia may be on the verge of splitting in two. Havel's party did poorly in recent parliamentary elections. The winners were Slovak nationalists and Czech capitalists. But they have differences which may prove irreconcilable. To help explain what's happening in Czechoslovakia, we called Lawrence Weschler, a staff writer for The New Yorker, who is now writing an article based on his recent trip to Czechoslovakia. He's been reporting on Eastern Europe since the early days of Poland's Solidarity Movement. Some say that Havel is the only person who can hold Czechoslovakia together, but it doesn't look like he'll remain president much longer.
Interestingly, Havel remains the most popular person in the country, and if people were allowed to vote in a popular election for the president, undoubtedly Havel would win. But it is a parliamentary system, and the parliament, the way it's structured, elects the president, and the country is in the process of breaking up in various ways, including the nationalist problem that we were talking about before. There is a definite distinction between how people feel in Slovakia and how people feel in the Czech lands. And in a way, there has to be unanimity almost for Havel to remain president, and there's not going to be that, it looks like.
Well, let's look at who the leaders are now in Czechoslovakia after the parliamentary elections. We have Václav Klaus, who's the leader of the largest Czech party. Who is he?
Klaus is a very interesting case. He is a what I call a utopian capitalist. He is a Thatcherite, virtually. I mean, in fact, he was running ads by Thatcher in his campaign. He wants to convert to capitalism absolutely as quickly as possible. His plans make the shock therapy that Poland went through look relatively benign. Now, his background is that he in no way participated in the Charter 77 movement or the oppositionist movement in the old days. He was one of the people, one of the millions and millions of people in Czechoslovakia who were perfectly happy to live their lives, not confronting the regime, not being heroes. There are stories about as late as 1989, Klaus, who was at that time working in the Economic Forecasting Institute. He was not a Communist Party member, but he had the protection of the head of the institute, who was a communist. And he was asked at a key moment whether he would sign a protest in 1989 against Havel being imprisoned as late as that, and he refused to do it. He is the quintessential kind of technocratic member of what's called in Czechoslovakia the gray zone, people who didn't actively support the regime but in no way opposed it. And now that it's in a way now at a point where it doesn't really take any courage to oppose the regime, he turns out to be this incredibly fierce anti-communist, and a large part of his campaign is being more anti-communist than thou, and specifically more anti-communist than people like Havel and so forth, who he ridicules for being too weak and if anything tainted by their socialist or socialism with a human face, all those old kinds of associations. Klaus personally doesn't attack Havel that way, personally, but his party attacked all of Havel's associates in exactly that way, and it was very effective.
We have Vladimir Meciar, who is the head of the Slovak's most popular party. He probably wants to secede from Czechoslovakia, to break away. Why does he want to do that?
Well, it's not entirely clear that he wants to secede, but he definitely wants more autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
He is, in a way, the exact opposite of Klaus, and the nightmare in Czechoslovakia is that the two separate parts of the country, the Czech part and the Slovak part, have gone entirely opposite ways in the election. Meciar was an old-line communist. He reminds me, to some extent, of Milosevic in Serbia. He is one of these old-line communists who has reinvented himself as a fierce nationalist, and his authority comes from his nationalism. He was a rather horrendous, horrible, old-style communist. It appears that he was probably deeply steeped in the secret police. He may have been an informer, and in any case, he used secret police files in rather disgusting ways. But he wraps himself up in Slovakian nationalism, And when he gets attacked for being a communist or a socialist, he says, forget that, I'm a Slovak, and it works. Now, having said that, it is also the case that the sorts of cures that Klaus wants to try in the Czech lands, these very fierce capitalist transformation cures, which may in fact work to some extent in the Czech lands, will probably not work at all in the Slovak areas. And so that Mečiar is defending the Slovakian region from this incursion of this kind of mad dog, utopian capitalist onslaught. Having said that, the way he's doing it is by really entrenching the old communists in rather horrible ways. And so Slovakia, people in Slovakia have a terrible choice at this point. They can either stick out with Mečiar, who is going to kind of put them in the worst of their old culture, or they can go with Klaus, whose economic programs doesn't have much to offer them.
Why wouldn't Klaus's form of capitalism work in the Slovak lands?
Slovakia, going back a ways, the Slavs came into Europe from Asia, from Russia, that area, and the deepest penetration of Europe was in the Czech lands. If there's a finger that goes all the way to Prague, virtually, into Germany. The part that was the most extended of that finger and that was entirely surrounded by German-speaking languages were the Czechs. Closer into the hand, let's say, were the Slovaks. They were not surrounded by the Germans. The ones that were completely surrounded by German speakers were part, eventually, of the Austrian side of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And they were allowed to become, the Czechs tended to be more secularist, more Western-looking. They had tremendous capitalist development in the Czech lands around Prague, for example. I was amazed to find out that half of the steel production in Europe in the 1930s took place in the areas around Prague and the Czech lands. So they had tremendous development. Slovakia, on the other hand, was part of the Hungarian Empire. It was part of there's the Austro-Hungarian Empire. The Austrian side was much more tolerant of its Slavs. The Hungarian side was much more repressive, punitive, did not develop that area. The Slovakian side was primarily agricultural, had no independent industrial production, really. And when the communists take over, eventually they were, after 1918, they were constituted as a single country after the Austro-Hungarian Empire had broken down. The Czech side and the Slovak side were put together. Czechs and Slovaks are both Slavs. They speak different languages, but they are mutually intelligible to each other. But they have had these different upbringings in the Austrian side and the Hungarian side. And all through the 1920s and 30s, there was a whole problem about how to develop Slovakia as opposed to how to develop the Czech lands. Well, when the communists come into power after 1948, they notice that the Slovak lands are much more agricultural, and this is not part of communist doctrine. So they go on a crash drive to industrialize them. And there's a tremendous amount of industrialization that takes place in Slovakia, of the communist style, which are these huge behemoth dinosaur industries. On the Czech side, you still have these kind of Western style industries, but on the Slovak side, it's these terrible old dinosaurs that get constructed. Also, for example, you have an awful lot of arms manufacture that takes place in the Slovak regions. They don't do it on the Czech side because the Czech side is much closer to the front of an eventual war. The Czech side, Prague, is only 100 miles or so from the German border, 50 miles from the Austrian border, so they don't want to have arms manufacturing there. They put that all in the Slovak areas, which is closer to the Soviet Union, with the result that the working classes in Slovakia are all tied to these monstrous factories that if Klaus has his way, they're all going to get shut down. Already today, in the Czech areas, you only have 3% unemployment. In the Slovak areas, and they haven't even started the crash programs, there's already 12% unemployment. So when Klaus, who basically says there should be a minimum amount of state intervention in the economy, when he says that to the Slovaks say, well, wait a second, all these places will shut down. If there's no planning, if it's not done slowly, it's going to be a disaster. And so they're very scared. And who do they turn to? They turn to their old communist bosses who have recast themselves as these nationalists.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Lawrence Weschler, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. He recently returned from Czechoslovakia. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Lawrence Weschler, a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. He's working on an article on Czechoslovakia from where he recently returned. If Slovakia has all the old dinosaur industries and is the poorer half of Czechoslovakia, why would the Czechs want to prevent them from splitting off?
A while ago, the Czechs did not at all want to let the Slovaks leave. There's now some talk that, fine, get lost, go ahead. You guys are a drag to be around anyway, especially if you go choosing these ridiculous dinosaurs like Mečiar as your leader. Get lost. Now, the reasons, there are various reasons that it's a problem for Klaus, for example, if the breakup takes place. Klaus is interested in a lightning-swift transformation to capitalism, and he needs a tremendous amount of foreign investment very quickly. And if things were completely quiet, there's a good chance he would get a lot of it. I mean, there was Czechoslovakia was, as I said, a highly industrialized. The Czech lands were highly industrialized in the old days, and there are a lot of Western companies happy to go back into the Czech lands. But if Czechoslovakia is in the is first of all deadlocked in its parliament and can't get things passed, it can't get bills to do the transformation because there's this whole Slovak contingent that refuses to vote for it, then there just literally won't be the laws on the books, commercial codes and things like that, that will be filibustered continuously. So that's a blockage. Now, the thing that you might want to do at that point is get rid of the Slovaks, say, fine, make your own country, but that is tremendously complicated. The way the communist country system was set up, there were these, you know, the metal industry was spread throughout the country, and as you break it up, parts of it are in Slovakia, parts of it are in the Czech lands. Another problem is that one of the things that the Czechoslovakians liked to advertise themselves or in Prague was that they were a wonderful finger for Western Europe going the other way, a finger going back into the Soviet Empire, that the Czech-Slovak railroad, in effect, went right into the Ukraine and beyond that into Russia. And so it was a wonderful trading center, and that's why IBM and Xerox and Mercedes-Benz and so forth should locate in the Czech lands, because it was directly attached to the Slovak lands and before you know it into Eastern Europe, I mean into the East. But if there's a breakup, if there begins to be a militarized border, let's say, between the Czech lands and the Slovak lands, that advantage disappears. So there are various reasons why they would want to avoid the breakup, and they may still try to do that. But having said that, it's looking less and less likely these days.
The Charter 77 people in the parliamentary elections that just happened did not do well. How much of that would you attribute to them, to disenchantment with them as leaders, and how much would you attribute to the quality of their campaign?
Well, this is an interesting issue. Charter 77 broke up into these kind of right and left wings. The right wings portrayed themselves, tended to get near Klaus, although they tried to, parenthetically, they tried to distinguish themselves by Klaus by saying, we are Charter 77 Klausians as opposed to Klausians. Interestingly, in the final analysis, even those people lost out. Klaus got the votes, and the Charter 77 Klausians didn't get the vote, so many of them didn't make it into Parliament either. But the other ones, the kind of socialism with a human face, Dean Speer, people who Havel generally was more sympathetic was with people like Orban and so forth, they had this party called OH, and this party's political campaigning was absolutely pathetic. I mean, they were just hapless, and they didn't know how to deal with the lustration issue. They weren't militantly principled on it. They kind of waffled. Beyond that, it was unclear exactly what their critique of Klaus was. Were they for reform? Were they not for reform? Were they for Klaus in reform? It was unclear. Eventually, in the early days of the campaign, from one day to the next, there are billboards all over the country. And the OH billboard, the initial billboard, was a body of water. I mean, it was like a photograph of water, like of a pool, but it was taken maybe 4 or 5 feet above the pool, and all you saw was water from one end of the billboard to the other. And on top of it was an exclamation point, and the slogan was, "Our way is the right way."
What does that mean?
And he just looked at it. He said, "What does that mean? I mean, we're all going into the lake with you. We're going down the drain." I think it must have been trying to talk about purity or something. I'm not even sure what it was. Nobody could figure it out. Klaus, meanwhile, had standard American, Saatchi and Saatchi Thatcherite ads. I mean, bold guys in suits marching forward, and all this kind of stuff. And people who knew the people who were in the posters said, "That guy's completely nebby, but he's dressed up in a suit. He looks fantastic." You know, And so there was that kind of campaigning on Klaus's party. And meanwhile, these kind of sweet-natured idealists, which is the very thing that allowed them to fight the regime for 20 years, was their kind of crazy idealism. They presented themselves as kind of haplessly crazy and idealistic, and people said, well, look, we need hard-headed people who know how to negotiate and know how to... And one of the things that also happened, by the way, in the election was that Klaus and Metsiar kind of invented each other, that the Czechs came to feel they needed a dynamic leader like Klaus to fight Metsiar, and Metsiar was able to present himself as the only man who could stand up to Klaus, Those two swamped the elections.
Lawrence Wechsler, he's a staff writer for The New Yorker. His latest book, A Miracle, A Universe, Settling Accounts with Torturers, has been published in paperback. This is Fresh Air.